listening to CPR, communitypublicradio.org. And this is Weekday World. I'm your host, Don DeBar. With a report of some of the news and events of the past 24 hours from the CPR Newsroom. From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A moment of clarity in international relations. During the annual Marathon press conference held by Russia's President Vladimir Putin in Moscow Thursday. This was Kate DePuri, the Moscow bureau chief of the Associated Press, asking President Putin the following question, followed by his response.
With your permission, I will ask a question in English.
The U.S. wants Russia to do more to persuade North Korea to halt its missile programs. Would Russia support tougher sanctions against North Korea? And do you think that cooperation on North Korea could warm up U.S.-Russia relations, or have you lost hope of mending them under Mr. Trump?
You're interesting people. Really. Have you noticed that your congressmen, your senators, they look so well, so nice, so handsome. They have ties and shirts, and they seem to be smart people, but they put us on the same shelf with North Korea and Iran. And at the same time, they ask the U.S. president to address the issues of North Korea and the Iranian nuclear program together with us. Are you? Are you okay? It just looks weird. It just doesn't make much sense.
Russia's president was referring to a sanctions bill that was passed in August by the U.S. Congress almost unanimously, which sanctions both Russia and North Korea, and, by the way, Iran. For more on President Putin's speech and more, we spoke with Peter Lavelle, the host of RT's Crosstalk, via Skype from Moscow Thursday. Peter, very interesting conversation with the world and President Putin, his annual ritual of sitting down for 3, 4, 5 hours with the international press and taking on all comers. And we heard the AP's station chief in Moscow.
And Vladimir Putin's reaction was, it speaks to the obvious. So let me get this straight. You want us to help you with something. At the same time, you're sanctioning us.
Right.
And you haven't shown the public or us why you're sanctioning us.
Right. And the sanctioning, with the help that they want is, are you willing to help us do more sanctions against North Korea, as she referred to it, when, 2 months ago, Congress imposed sanctions in one bill on Russia and North Korea, and by the way, Iran. And now you want us to pile on with North Korea.
Syria as
right.
well.
That's okay. right. That's right.
It's the same group all of the time. But see, Don, this speaks to how the U.S. is so myopic, how it looks at the world. It's how do you help us? And we have no interest in what your concerns are. What are your concerns, Russia? What are your concerns, Mr. Putin? They've gotten so used to this. They have this habit of never seeing that other countries have sovereignty and interests, because it's really quite troubling is that if you do have sovereignty and interests, it must be a threat to the United States. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's that easy to understand.
Yeah.
But it's all lost in the American think tank world, in the American media, of course. I mean, we never hear when Donald Trump ordered the missile attack, the Tomahawk attack on Syria. No one in the U.S. media was told that that was illegal under international law and a violation of Syria's sovereignty. No one in the U.S. media ever talks about how Russia was invited to Syria. You never hear these things because
right.
that's not how the American foreign policy elite looks at the world. So Vladimir Putin's reaction was a smackdown, but it was really very true. And I just have to wonder how that AP reporter understood it. I wonder if she really did.
Yeah, I know it. And, you know, I don't think that they've had to, you know, they've been forced to engage reality at that level the way the rest of the world has had to for many. You know, I'm thinking back to the Bush administration, and we were hearing about all these policies that they were implementing, total information awareness, full spectrum dominance, all of these things that are, I guess, legs or components of, like, complete, I hate to be redundant, but total hegemony. Dmitry Babich has been on and off in our conversations, you know, making reference to the fact that, you know, there's a totalitarianism out of this neoliberal model in
Absolutely.
Terms of reach, the actual that dwarfs anything that was even imputed to the Soviet Union, let alone existed, simply because the wherewithal to dominate everything didn't exist back then the way it does now, and it wasn't exercised either, like this.
And with this totalitarian reach is absolute intolerance. You see it in domestic politics in the United States. You see it in foreign policy. If again, I go back to the S word, sovereignty. If you protect your sovereignty, then somehow you're against American hegemony. And that's as if American hegemony is something good. And actually, they wouldn't use that word in media. But I mean, everyone in the policy thinking world, they think hegemony is good. And that's what they want because they know, and we've said this many times on your program,
right.
is that the unipolar moment is coming to an end, and they know it. And this explains the increased hostility, particularly towards Iran, because Iran is one big puzzle piece that they want to take off the board because ultimately, I think for the U.S. policy elites, it's not Russia that's the ultimate challenge. It's going to be China. And they're going to want to see if they can break up the quasi-alliance that Russia and China have, which will be very, very difficult. And neither country will abandon Iran. Repeat, neither country, Russia or China, will abandon Iran. Keep that in mind.
Right. I mean, that's
it's a red line. And the Chinese and the Russians take red lines seriously.
Yeah.
They just don't make them up at the moment for political points. It's real.
Yeah,
I mean, it's very dangerous.
This is the point. You know, the U.S. is used to basically, you know, being able to say anything as ridiculous as possible, completely foreclose any discussion of both how ridiculous that particular thing is and also what they should be discussing instead of the ridiculous, simply by dominating the entire narrative, all of the media, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And that moment has passed. You know, RT and Sputnik, for example, from Russia, big part of the leak of that, former edifice that was, blocking the whole conversation within their defined parameters. And you have CGTN from China and Xinhua and, other Chinese media, China Daily, that are, they can't shut them off. And you've got Telesur and you've got Press TV and all of these. And so the conversation can't be limited by Washington anymore.
Right. A perfect example was our wonderful correspondent in Washington, Samira Khan.
She was great the other day. She was great at the State Department.
Wonderful. And yeah. She'll be moving to Moscow. She's going to be joining us here in Moscow shortly.
Miss New Jersey.
Yeah, she's coming over. Yep. She came. She visited us. We came enchanted, and they're moving her here. And I think she's got a great future with us. But, let's refresh our listeners' memory here. She confronted the State Department spokesperson about what the spokesperson said a few weeks ago. And what's happening right now is that when RT was going to be made into a foreign agent under FARA, but nothing would change. Everything will be the same. And then, of course, it's not, because the congressional credentials for RT, and I guess Sputnik, or if it hasn't happened, it will happen soon, were deprived of us. And then she asked the question, but you said nothing would change. And then you look at, the shame, it's like looking at a dumb peasant.
Yeah, well, they don't know how to handle it. They really, they're not used to it.
Because it's a lie, okay?
Right.
And it's obvious,
right.
And you did lie. And they don't like being confronted. You have to get along. Or, it's my way or the highway. There's no debate. There's no discussion. There's no nuance.
Yeah,
okay?
This
is one of the – I think I would say my primary mission on my own program, Crosstalk, is just to show the glaring hypocrisy of these things. All right? If the U.S. said, we want to rule the world because we think we're better than anyone else, and we because of our heritage, our view, and all that – but don't say, say international law and a precedent and all that.
Right,
I mean,
right.
If you just want to be a bully, just say you're a bully. I mean, at least you'd be more transparent,
right.
I mean, it would be more understandable.
Right.
Yeah, it was about oil in Iraq. Yeah, it was. And it was about Gaddafi possibly creating a pan-African currency. Yeah, it was about that. Now, just say it, okay? And then it's more believable, at least.
Right. Everybody knows it anyway, except for the American people. And that's one of the more interesting parts. The whole Russiagate matter, when it boils down to it, first, the real opposition to Trump from the deep state has to do, it's been exposed, pretty nakedly, with the fact that he prefers or threatens detente with Russia and China also, which is apparently fundamentally intolerable by the established elite here. And so they are going to unprecedented, measures that they've completely wasted whatever credibility the media had left in their drive to do what they're doing to Trump. There are so many people that look at, I was looking at the numbers from the Moore-Jones race. And Moore spent a little shy of, he spent $880,000, and the Democratic candidate spent $11 million. The media was essentially calling Moore a child molester, national, international, local media, 24/7 for months. And yet, he came within a point and a half. To me, what that says is that there is absolutely no legitimacy granted by the voters to what comes out of the box anymore.
Yeah, but the thing is, Don, if you look at Judge Moore's electoral history in Alabama, every election that he's won or lost was almost by the same margin.
Right.
So all of this attention, all of this propaganda, all of this smearing, I listened to Moore's interview with Sean Hannity, which I thought was excellent journalism. Excellent. It was a really good, Sean can be a real blowhard, but I mean, he did a really good interview there. And I thought that's for Alabamans to decide their make their decision on. Right. Not all these other outside forces here, which I think was just really disgraceful. It's not about democracy. I think it was a local thing, and the local people made the right decision. In my opinion, if that's what they want, that's what they should get.
Right.
Okay. But the whole thing was completely blown out of proportion. And so, you know, this, it's like an epiphenomenon. Everybody's talking about something else. The people of Alabama, they say, we know Judge Moore. We voted for him before. We voted against him before. And now they made their decision. Okay, fine. It has nothing to do with populism in the United States. Zero. It has nothing to do with any of those things. But no, you have a wall-to-wall, 24/7 punditry, particularly on the liberal channels. They have no idea what they're talking about. Really.
Yeah. And the thing, you know, again, I didn't cover that at all, and I could care less who Alabama elects to represent them. To me, the story was the, you know, I look at it as the phenomenology of it. And, you know, you call the epiphenomenal. And it's exactly like that. You had, and at the core of it is the entire power, you know, the reach to the extent they have it of this total information or full spectrum dominance or whatever, didn't shake at all the thing, the behavioral patterns of the people that were targeted. And this is another indication of the loss of legitimacy of the institutions here, where the people don't believe what they're told by authorities, by the media, by, you know, all these places that are supposed to be the sources of information. And they're willing, even if something as fundamental as, okay, well, look, I don't know, is the guy a child molester or not? I don't care. They're telling me not to vote for him, so I'm going to vote for him. That's how. Okay. That's how
I'm
powerful.
I'm going to be really politically incorrect, as I always am. All right. And as far as this whole phenomenon about sexual harassment, it exists. You know it, and I know it. There's no denying of it at all. I've seen it with my own eyes throughout my life in work life.
For sure.
But you know what? You know what, Don? Where's the due process here?
There was this no process.
And they're destroying institutions.
That's what
I find it sickening watching this happen.
This is what I'm seeing an obsession.
I don't care if bad guys, you know, they lose their career and their livelihood. That's fine with me. That's right. You know, actions have consequences. But this is another hysteria. So we have Russia, Russia, Russia. Now we have harassment, harassment, harassment. Right. You know, and the media is doing this. This postmodernist order is doing this. I mean, you know, white men are the enemy of the state now. I'm really kind of generalizing here, but that's ridiculous. Okay, and I would much prefer look at Franken. Okay, I mean I find him odious. Yeah. I don't like him at all. Okay, his sanctimonious attitude about, you know, everything, and he's so very important. But I would have said, if he would have said no, I want due process, I would have said give the guy due process.
Of course.
All
right. I mean, but that's, it's not about that. What this, there's an obsession. Look, I mean, in the same way that the you had people that were marching, say, in Charlottesville, because they were actually opposed to having these symbols of, you know, slavery or, you know, the old South or whatever the particular symbol symbolized to people, and you say, yeah, you know, I can get behind that. However, why is it that exactly now, this statue that was there last year and 20 years ago and 50 years ago, on the list of things that needs to be done when you have millions of people unemployed, millions of people in refugee status because of U.S. foreign policy, three people a day being shot by the police in the United States, this whole list of things, why is it that today we have to rally everything around taking down a statue of Robert E. Lee? Not that I'm opposed to taking down a statue of Robert E. Lee, but who was making that priority list, and why?
It's really interesting. Two things. If a statue offends you, and if you're an African-American and a statue of Robert E. Lee offends you, I understand that. Fair. But resorting to violence and vandalism, I'm against that because it's against the law.
Yeah.
You need to have a conversation
about that's what that is part too.
Done,
part.
Okay. Yeah. Also, let's keep in mind, everybody, the vast majority of Civil War statues and monuments in the Old South were paid for and put up by Democrats. Yeah. Remember that.
Yeah.
Remember
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
And also, yeah. I said 2 points. Here's a third point. A lot of these statues, when they were put up, they were about reconciliation. The worst experience in American history, the Civil War. You know, can we just kind of rub two brain cells together yeah. every once in a while
yeah.
before everybody yeah. jumps to conclusions and to sides? And when you're on one side, the other side is immoral. What happened to politics?
Yeah.
What happened yeah. to politics?
Well, that goes to the point that I was yeah. making, because you have. This was decided to be the priority, you know, in the midst of everything that people might want to focus on. This is decided to be a priority here. Here, all of a sudden, you know, the most of paramount importance is dealing with sexual harassment. Okay, admittedly, a very serious problem and something that should have been dealt with decades ago. And it wasn't. But suddenly, at this moment, it is. And at the tail of it, of course, is, just like in each of the other situations, Trump should be impeached. And that's what yeah. they're selling. And what they're willing to do, apparently, is to take down each and every lever of their own tools of oppression in order to get Trump. Like, this is at the top of their list yeah. of priorities.
It was Russia, 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 Russian collusion. Oop, that's a dud. It fizzled out. Oh, by the way, the corruption is really in the DOJ and the FBI.
Right.
Oh, nothing to see here. Move along.
Right, next.
Number two. next one. Collusion. Oh, collusion with the Russians.
Oops,
oh,
no. Collusion with Israel, actually.
Nothing here. You know, nothing to see here. Move along. The right. third one. Now, and you know what? Going back to Franken, you know, he was, I don't know if he's going to resign or not. He's a very dodgy character.
Yeah, I
okay?
know. I know.
I thought he was a pretty good comic at one time. He made me laugh, at least. But I'm not sure he's really going to go. But, you know, here are his establishment friends in the Democratic Party. They decide, okay, we'll throw him under the bus. Because by throwing him under the bus, we don't care what he did or didn't do. Okay, but if Roy Moore wins, then we'll have grounds not to see him, which would be completely against the law.
Right.
There's no precedent right. for that. But this is what these liberals do, and these great values that they can't claim to hold. They're going to throw someone under the bus in case, because of the possibility that somebody, their arch rival, and we all agree, Roy Moore is really out there, really out there.
For
okay,
sure.
But that's not for us to judge. That's,
right.
That's not because if we're supposed to judge, then why do we need elections? Why don't we just abolish them? Okay.
Right.
Because these
right.
people in power, they know what's best. They know what's best, you know, keeping Russia as an enemy. They know best keeping Iran as an enemy. They know best by moving the American embassy to Jerusalem.
Which they're not going to do, by the way. That's not even, you know,
well, I mean,
what Trump announced wasn't even that, really.
Vulgar language in your program, but, you know, you're screwed both ways.
Yeah, right.
Because by saying it, you're screwed. By not doing it, you're screwed.
That's right.
I mean, did anybody think this through?
No,
no,
they didn't. I know it. And so now you have also, let's look at, for example, what the thing of the fight over Alabama was really about. And you have a couple of dimensions to it. And the one that the people that hold themselves out to be politically astute point to is that, well, it's about being able to stymie Trump in the Senate. If you swing that seat, you know, when now you got a defection here and there from a McCain or a Lindsey Graham or whatever, you know, you can stymie Trump and he won't be able to deliver anything. You'll be able to take him out. And maybe next year the Democrats will be able to gain something in both houses of the Congress. However, the real thing was about when Steve Bannon left the White House, said, I'm going to be running campaigns for the Senate next year. There are 8 Republicans that are up for re-election. I'm targeting 6 of them that are aligned with McConnell, and we're going to take control of the Senate away from McConnell. And the moment that he declared that, they shortly had the primary where Moore won, backed by Bannon, and McConnell and the Republicans and Democrats that backed his opponent lost, even though they spent 10 times as much money. And then Bannon looks across the country at McConnell and says, I'm coming to get you. And that's what the context of this last election was and is. And after everything that's happened, more winning or losing doesn't mitigate that for McConnell, because at a point and a half, if Bannon's going after six seats, he's going to probably get three or four of them, and that's going to be enough.
Yeah, the thing is that, you know, Steve Bannon is a fascinating person, and there's some things that I very much agree with him on, and some other things I think he's very short-sighted and not particularly knowledgeable about. Mm. But Steve Bannon there's a bit of hubris here. He thinks he got Trump elected. He thinks he understands the Trump voter. I think actually Trump really does best. He may not be able to articulate it very well. He's not a very articulate person. He has an intuitive understanding. And believe it or not, I mean, people will curse me for saying this, the guy's very talented. He's multifaceted. It's quite. He's a one and only. I don't think we'll ever get to see it again. Yeah, it's an anomaly. Right. It's a fascinating. Right. But Bannon, I think he better be very, very careful, because I'm not sure he understands the revolt. I saw his documentary film. It's a bit off. It's a bit odd, okay, to be honest with you. There's some things in there that I think he's absolutely right about. These waves and cycles and stuff like that, I'm not so sure about as a trained historian. But I think the bigger picture is here, and actually there's a silver lining, maybe to Steve Bannon after all, is that I see both parties, you know, having really struggling how to move forward.
Right.
And I think that's a good thing. That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
Because I really want to see the death throes of the Democrats. I mean, they have betrayed their base so often and so deeply. And what about the working people of America? I don't care about your gender. I don't care about your cultural preferences. I care if everybody has dignity in work. That's the most important thing. And progressives and conservatives can come together. And everybody else that doesn't want to get on that train, get lost, because you had your run.
You know, again, we're talking phenomenology here when we're talking about the situation in both of those parties, and particularly like what we saw manifest in the election last year. We saw Sanders rise, regardless of what Sanders himself did and what Sanders himself actually is. We saw the phenomenon of disaffected Democrats rallying around an opposition candidate, as they perceived it, and lifting him up to where really he won. He would have been the nominee if it wasn't stolen and if he had actually defended it.
I think he could have won the presidency.
And he could well have won, even as people were calling him a socialist, which is another phenomenon in American history. Then you have Trump, of course, not a Republican, winning the Republican primary, dusting all of the heroes.
Conservative. He's not even a conservative.
That's right. And again, disaffected Republicans. You have, I guess, inside the Republican Party, both the quote-unquote white working class and the middle class, what's left of it. Historically, that's, you know, the small business people were the, you know, foot soldiers of the Republican Party from the 30s on. And, you know, they have been promised and promised and promised, and they've been, you know, dissolving essentially as if they were in a sea of acid for decades. And so they latched on to Trump and said, you know, to hell with these people that we've been following for the last 30 or 40 years. The Democrats, the working class, has suffered the same, union labor in particular, but workers in general, and also the various quote-unquote minority groups that were constituents in the Democratic Party, who've all been promised things, and at the best, they've gotten symbology. Like they used to say in the old Horn and Hardart commercials, you can't eat atmosphere. You know, you get a black president, but you lose half to two-thirds of the accumulated wealth of black people inside the 8 years that he's in office. You've seen this with Democrats are in power with Clinton and everyone else, and the union, you know, loses membership from, you know, where were they, 20% of where they were 40 years ago. So there's disaffection among the constituents of both parties, and I think we're seeing people like...
And you have minority groups that are—they're tired of being sold this bill of goods.
Yep.
Okay. What did you give me?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Cyclical dependence.
Right.
Okay. That's your gift to me.
Right.
No. I mean, I Larry Elder's, you know, really, really good commentator. I mean, I really enjoy listening to him because I understanding how we both know as Americans and race and politics is very complicated, very contentious at times, and I need to step back and I need to learn how that their community see, or members of their community, I'm talking about the Black community, see themselves. It's very refreshing. It's very enlightening for me. His tirade against the Democratic Party and a lot of other minority groups are saying, yeah, you guys just take us for granted. You know, we're just your electoral fodder. And I think, and that's an important trend. And that's it for both parties here. People don't want to be taken for granted anymore. You know, this block will go with us. That block will go with them. People don't, they don't, because of political correctness, people are being forced into these boxes. And people, a lot of people don't want that. They have very different goals and ambitions in their lives that are not directly tied to their gender or their race. And I think this political correctness that comes from this liberal perspective is very toxic. Because it's basically a Soviet experiment, creating the new man, the new woman, or the new gender. I don't know. That's not the everyday experience for the average person. The everyday experience is that how much is I'm going to get paid? Will I get a raise? How can I think about the future? Can I be in a position to think about the future of my children? Sorry, maybe that's old fashioned, but it's true.
Yeah, the more deferred that is, the stronger the impulse. I mean, it's not something that you can suffocate. People need to live indoors. They need to eat. They need to have health care and feel like they're getting an adequate education for themselves and their children, and they expect that their children will do at least as well. And when generation after generation, because that's where we're at now, sees that frustrated, they react. And that's what we're seeing. We're seeing people looking at...
You see these people on the West Coast and the East Coast, they're really smug, you know, and so for some reason they think they've been anointed to preach their morality to everyone else. They never see these problems, okay? I think you should talk to people on an everyday basis all over the country. How does it affect your life and what can be done to fix this problem, okay?
That's right. We got to stop there, Peter. Thank you very much. And looking forward to the latest edition of Crosstalk, because I just
always
enjoy
it. Look forward to having you on again very soon.
Me too. Thank you very much, Peter. Appreciate it.
All right.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.
Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. It would seem the more the anti-Trumpers push to have the president removed from office, the more we learn about the media in such places as the FBI, how they really work. To date, the investigation known as Russiagate has revealed preciously little, though we're learning there was collusion elsewhere. Crosstalking Real Collusion, I'm joined by my guest, Richard Goodstein in Washington. He is a Democratic political strategist and a former advisor to Hillary Clinton's two presidential campaigns. In Miami, we have John Cardillo. He is host of Off the Cuff on Rebel Media. And in Phoenix, we cross to Josh Bernstein. He is a TV talk show host. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump in anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. Josh, I'm going to go to you first because one of the Crosstalk rules is always go to the person that got up earliest for this program, and that is you. I want to talk about some of the things that's coming out of the FBI and special investigation into alleged Trump collusion with Russia during the election. We have this Peter Strzok, you know, and he's written some, you know, with his girlfriend, some pretty nasty things about Donald Trump. You know, he's an idiot. He is a nuisance. He's a menace. You know, all these kind of things. That's fine. You can have an opinion like that. But when you have something like this, I want to believe the path you threw out for consideration in Andy's office, presumably that's Andrew McCabe, there's no way he gets elected, but I am afraid we can't take the risk. It's like an insurance policy in an unlikely event that you're going to die before 40. I mean, that's more than just saying you don't like someone, calling somebody a creep or something like that. That sounds like you got a plan and you've got power, and you're going to make things happen behind the scenes. How do you read that, Josh?
Well, I think I read this as the elites and the deep state and the globalists, they all expected Hillary Clinton to be the next president of the United States. But the American people thought otherwise, and they voted overwhelmingly to make Donald Trump the 45th president of the United States. For Rod Rosenstein to say with a straight face in any testimony that he believes that there's no collusion and that he doesn't think that Robert Mueller should be either investigated or replaced is just insane. It truly is. I mean, if you look at, and I'm calling it collusion GPS, but if you look at fusion GPS and you see all the things that have happened from Bruce Orr and Nellie Orr being part of that organization, then you have the fact that they were having secret meetings. Bruce Orr had secret meetings with the people at Fusion GPS, with Glenn Simpson, and of course, with Christopher Steele, the one who planted the fake Russian dossier. It is absolutely incredible why the Justice Department is not putting a special prosecutor on Robert Mueller to investigate Uranium One and Fusion GPS is beyond all recognition. I can't even imagine why that is not happening. The only thing I can think of is maybe Jeff Sessions is compromised in some respect.
You know, Richard, weigh in there. I mean, these are, I mean, it... At the very least, these are uncomfortable things that have been revealed that happened during the election and the transition here. I mean, the fact that you have a high-ranking member at the FBI, his wife, is working for Fusion GPS, I mean, that is just extraordinary. I mean, and we have, and it took quite a bit of effort for Congress to get this kind of this information. I mean, they had to really, and they're still obstructing requests from Congress here. I mean, don't we need a little bit more transparency at the FBI about all this? Go ahead, Richard.
Peter, do you assume your viewers know about Alice in Wonderland, where up was down and in was out and black was white? You know, Josh just referred to this overwhelming victory. This is a victory by somebody who got 46%. His opponent got 3 million more votes. 54% of the people rejected him. He had the lowest 25% of the electoral
Richard,
college.
But Richard,
can you address
the FBI question, please?
I am. The FBI is what won this election for Donald Trump. Why? Because Comey was pressured by FBI agents in New York, right? And he put out, he had his press conference back in July last year criticizing Hillary. That was totally against the rules. He put out that letter 11 days before the election, which totally undermined her at a time when the FBI knew darn well that Donald Trump was basically working with the Russians, or the Russians were certainly trying to help him, and did nothing to disclose that.
Based
to the
on the dossier,
so for now, to say
based
that
on
FBI
the dossier
that the
Democrats paid for, and presumably the FBI as well.
No.
I mean, okay, all right. Let me pull in John here. Richard, you're always a jewel on the program, but let me go to John here, okay? But okay, if we connect the dots here, if we're using, you know, when I just gave that quote right there, I mean, that looks to me like trying to get FISA warrants on your political enemies. And this is the FBI, okay? If you want to go after your political opponents when you're in a political party, that's fair game. Everybody does it. This is the FBI. Okay, I want to know more about these types of things because we need to know if the FBI is corrupt and it needs to and people needed to be weeded out there, because I read these things here. I find it really quite shocking. This is the politicization of the Justice Department here. That is a banana republic. Go ahead, John.
Oh, absolutely. Look, and just I want to make one comment to Richard. They amuse me. I was kind of laughing. Richard and Democrats seem to forget that we don't elect our presidents here on the popular vote. Donald Trump took 74 more electoral votes than Hillary. It was a blowout. It was a landslide. And so to say that he was overwhelmingly elected is absolutely
gentlemen,
correct.
Hey, Richard, that, John,
that
and
itself,
Josh, hey, heads up. I don't want to talk about the election anymore. I'm sick and tired of that election.
Good,
I want to talk about what's going on now. Okay, go ahead, John in Miami.
Let's talk about the FBI, though. Here, so let me say this. I began my career in law enforcement. With the NYPD. I worked on very high-profile cases. What you are seeing is unprecedented, improper, and in my opinion, illegal. Strokes text. Now, like you said earlier, Peter, there were a lot of nothing burgers in those texts, but it only requires one damning piece of evidence. And that text, where he talks about insurance policies, where he essentially is talking about undermining a presidential campaign because he and a few other people, and let's be clear, 99.999% of FBI agents, street agents, do their job bravely, with integrity, with fidelity. The acronym, you know, the FBI's motto, fidelity, bravery, integrity. We're talking about a few bad actors at the top. We're talking about the arch villain, Andrew McCabe. We're talking about the moron puppet, James Comey, who was fired. And by the way, the president has every right to fire the FBI director.
Sure.
The president
sure.
is the chief law enforcement officer. He can fire the FBI director because it's Tuesday and raining and he's in a bad mood.
Sure.
He doesn't need a reason. And Peter Stroke, who was McCabe's little henchman. So they were definitely plotting to undermine a presidential election. It wasn't the politicization of the FBI. It was the weaponization of the Department of Justice, of the FBI, of the intelligence community on behalf of arch criminal, one of the dirtiest people ever in politics, Hillary Clinton. People need to go to jail. There should be a special counsel. And the Office of Inspector General has 450 gun and badge carrying agents who need to start making arrests.
Okay, Josh, I mean, let's go back to this Fusion GPS thing and Orr's wife, Nellie, here. I mean, that begs investigation here. I'm sorry, because we've all read that dossier. It is just completely hogwash. It's ridiculous, okay? And they're basing their investigation of Trump and his campaign based on this, and somebody in the FBI at a high level, his wife is working there, cutting a paycheck. Come on, Josh.
You're absolutely right. And not only that, the fake dossier was used in order to get the FISA warrant to then spy on Trump and his associates. So in other words, that was illegal as well because they were using something that was debunked and was not an even accurate document. Going back to what Richard said, first of all, Richard, there was three million illegal votes in the election, and Hillary only won, what, 52?
How do you know it wasn't
entire
five?
Counties, and Trump won about 3,000, okay? Yeah, well, at least 3 million. But here's the thing. Let me ask this to Richard. Why aren't we doing an investigation into James Comey's admittance and leaking when he gave testimony during the Senate Judiciary Committee? Why aren't we now also looking into Tarmac Gate, in which, you know, Loretta Lynch is talking to Bill Clinton, and then the next thing you know, we've got Hillary Clinton exonerated because it's carelessness and not gross negligence, which would have been a crime. Why aren't we investigating Susan Rice's unmasking? Why aren't we investigating Barack Obama's spying and using Loretta Lynch as a hit person, if you will, to go in and do all those things that have been done? Where are those investigations? How can we sit here with a straight face and say that there's Russian collusion when we have all of these other things, including Uranium One and everything else that is going on, selling 20% of our uranium rights to the Russians?
Richard, about 10 things. Let him get started on some of them. Go ahead, Richard.
Yes, please.
James Comey, Josh, testified that he spoke with Donald Trump 9 different times, okay? And Trump did not once ask, what did the Russians do? And you know why? It was the same reason that O.J. Simpson never said to the police, what happened to Nicole? Because Trump knew, and he knows. So this is Alice in Wonderland stuff. Let me give you an example of collusion. Let's assume somebody robbed the department store Goom or Tiffany's, and they've said to you, we have all these stolen goods. Would you like them? I'd love that. Let's meet. So what do you call it? You think that person who says, I'd love to look at those stolen goods, you think they have clean hands or dirty hands? That's what Congress is looking at. That's what Mueller is looking at.
Okay,
if you think that's okay,
Richard,
great. Come on, Richard, you got to be fair.
The Democrats paid for the Fusion GPS thing, okay?
I mean, what are you talking about? They're the ones that paid for it.
We have
a member of the FBI high level meeting with Christopher Steele. I have no idea what you're talking about. Seriously. I mean, do we know these things?
You don't know what Donald Trump Jr. said to the Russians? Yes, let's meet. I'd love that. You don't know what I'm talking about, Peter? Everybody in the U.S. who follows the news does. They know exactly what I'm talking about.
He wasn't in the government.
He
wasn't in the FBI. Look, gentlemen, I have to jump in here. I love this debate here, but we have to go to a short break. After that short break, we'll continue our discussion on still more Washington scandals.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR.
Okay, let's go back to Phoenix. I know you got a lot to say. Go ahead.
Well, look, I think Richard is the one that's actually in Alice in Wonderland, because he's ignoring the facts that there are all these other conflicts of interest, as well as all these other crimes that have taken place here. And yet we're sitting here concentrating on something that's already been debunked, and the fact that there was no Russian collusion. We now know that James Comey has even admitted in testimony that the President of the United States was not under surveillance. He was under surveillance. He was not under investigation. And if I was the President of the United States, I would do basically one thing. I would instruct my Department of Justice to immediately start 5 counter investigations. I would look into Robert Mueller and his ties to Uranium One and the Russians. I would look into James Comey's leaking of information that he testified in the Senate Judiciary Committee. I would also open up an investigation into Fusion GPS. I would also open up an investigation into Tarmac Gate, Loretta Lynch, and Susan Rice. If we opened up all of these simultaneous investigations, it would completely drown out this Mueller witch hunt. And that's exactly what it is. It is a witch hunt. They hate this president so much that even if they can't find anything on him, they go way back on these trumped up charges against Paul Manafort. And now you have, you know, Michael Flynn and everything else. So basically, they're trying to do anything they can. And the Trump attorneys, I don't think they're very smart, because they should be instructing the president to end this, and all he has to do is use all these other investigations to do it. It would drown out the Mueller investigation. We'd be back to talking about the good things like the economy, the stock market, and everything else that's happening in this country.
Okay, John, you wanted to jump in there in Miami? Go right ahead.
Yeah, let me jump in. First of all, let's stop the false narrative that Donald Trump Jr. did anything improper or illegal. It's opposition research. In fact, he did far less than your idol Hillary Clinton did to Bernie Sanders, another Democrat. Donald Trump Jr. took a legal opposition research meeting with a Russian lawyer who, by the way, had an immigration parole extension granted by the Obama administration. So don't blame him for taking an oppo meeting. That happens every day in politics. You know it, I know it, Josh knows it, Peter knows it. That being said, we're missing one important point about Nelly Orr. Nelly Orr didn't just work for Fusion GPS. Fusion GPS described Nelly Orr, Bruce Orr's wife. Bruce Orr was the number 4 man in the Department of Justice. The number 4 man. He had 2 roles, unprecedented. He had a criminal role and a counterintelligence role at DOJ. His office was 3 or 4 doors down from the Attorney General, 3 or 4 doors down from Rod Rosenstein. His wife, Nelly Orr, was considered the expert on all matters Russia at Fusion GPS. If you don't think she had a hand in, if not directed, the compiling of this fake news garbage dossier, you got another thing coming. This is a scandal that makes Watergate pale in comparison. This might be the greatest political scandal in American history. The number 4 man at DOJ, the number 2 man at FBI, Andrew McCabe, Andrew McCabe's handpicked disciple, Peter Stroke, conspiring against a political campaign, then taking that junk dossier to a FISA court, resting on their FBI credentials to convince a judge to issue a secret warrant, a Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court warrant, to surveil another political campaign for nothing other than political reasons. Now, with regards to Paul Manafort, if he committed financial crimes in 2006, he should pay. But nothing was found with regards to Russia collusion. With Papadopoulos, he pled guilty on a process crime. Nothing with Trump-Russia collusion. Michael Flynn, a process crime.
All right, let me.
Lying to investigators. There's a lot of debate. Let me just finish.
You
got to
talk.
Point.
No, none of those interviews would have happened. It's actually three against one, and I want Richard to get in there. Weigh in, Richard, please.
First, as regards this dossier, okay, I know everybody's spun up about it. Michael Flynn has pled guilty to lying to the FBI, not because of a dossier. Papadopoulos has pled guilty to lying to the FBI, not because of a dossier.
So what?
Paul Manafort was indicted by a grand jury, not because of a dossier. And the dossier, my point is, what will bring Trump and the people around him down are facts, okay? Are facts. The dossier might as well not even exist for purposes of what
Richard,
it is that Mueller is
investigating.
Give us one fact. I hear this all the time.
What is the fact that you're referring to, please?
Yeah, the fact is, I'll give you 4 facts. Russians said, we want to help you. the Trump people said, we want help. The Russians did help, WikiLeaks, etc.
When,
and
Richard?
Trump talked
timeline
about it 100 times.
Timeline is important,
yeah,
Richard.
The answer, Peter.
Ask CNN.
The answer, Peter.
Ask ABC News.
Listen,
the timeline
listen.
Is important. When did they ask? When?
You asked me a question. Well, the answer is the intelligence community, which you may not buy, and Josh and John may not accept the legitimacy of the U.S. intelligence community, but most people in America do, and they say that the Russians very much wanted to help Donald Trump win and Hillary Clinton lose, and by leaking WikiLeaks,
by getting the sad thing about that, Richard, is no evidence has ever been presented to back that claim up. Not one shred of evidence.
Well, the intelligence community...
So I just have to believe them, right? No, I don't, trust but verify. A great Republican said that once, okay? Go ahead,
every
John.
Every single prosecutor,
okay, go,
by the
go
way.
Go, Josh.
Every prosecutor.
Go ahead, Josh.
Let me just throw, go, let me throw
every
a couple points in here.
All right, John,
so
first, real quick. Hang on, guys.
We have
four professional talkers here. John, you go first in Miami. Go ahead.
Okay.
Thank you. The intelligence community never said that. What the intelligence community said was that Russia meddled in our elections. We knew that. That's old news. They never once said that Russia weaponized on behalf of Donald Trump. We know that Hillary Clinton was far more kind to Russia, and Russia paid far more money to the Clinton Foundation than they've ever given Donald Trump. So that is debunked, completely debunked. To say the dossier is irrelevant is ridiculous. Think of the legal concept, fruits of the poisonous tree. When I was active law enforcement, if I presented junk to a judge and I lied, I stood in front of that judge and said, I vetted this, it's valid. When I knew it wasn't, when I knew it was garbage, and that judge gave me a warrant, a defense attorney would get the entire case thrown out because the fruits of poisonous tree, I provided junk to get the warrant. I got the warrant under unconstitutional false pretenses, which is exactly what happened with the dossier. So the dossier is not irrelevant. The dossier is the crux of the issue.
I agree.
And there is nothing improper, nothing illegal, nothing
gun.
Remotely wrong with opposition research, whether it comes from a Russian, a Saudi Arabian, a Venezuelan, a Canadian, a Texan, or someone from Rhode Island. As long as you're not exchanging money and not disclosing it, there's nothing remotely wrong with it. We've got to debunk all of these ridiculous false narratives.
Okay, Josh and Phoenix, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say that all of the prosecutors so far, all of them, have ties to either Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Foundation, and or Barack Obama's administration. Okay, you've got Jenny Ree, you've got Andrew Weissman, you've got Goldstein, you've got Peter Strzok. Berman Jackson. You've got the other one that also was the prosecutor against Manafort. So this is a complete, this is not an impartial investigation. This is not an independent investigation. If it was, then you would have prosecutors that were from, I don't know, the George W. Bush administration, or you'd have people that were from the George H. Walker Bush, or even if the Reagan administration, if people are still around from there. This would have a mix of
you
people,
did. That's
but it's
Mueller.
Not. It is Mueller nothing
is that guy.
But Clinton operatives
he was a Reagan.
And Barack
he was
Obama
a Bush
appointees.
Nominee.
Go ahead, Richard. Go ahead, Richard.
Yeah. I'm saying Mueller, Robert Mueller, who is the head of this, was a Ronald Reagan appointee to a top law enforcement position. He was a George H.W. Bush appointee to a top law enforcement position. He was a George W. Bush to a top law enforcement position. Mueller. So this notion about who's on the staff, you know who gave contributions
Mueller
to a political party?
Is a deep
Neil
state
Gorsuch,
operative.
Who was just appointed to the Supreme Court.
Well, I'm not so worried about Democrat or Republican guys. I'm more worried about the deep state. That's what I worry about.
Right.
Okay. You know, John, one of the things, one of the things I really worry about here is if you look, because the way things are going, Manafort and Flynn seem to have been unfairly treated because they said something that wasn't true. I think a whole string of people in the Obama administration weren't forthright with the FBI. Flynn's got to be the saddest feeling guy right now in the whole world. He was doing what everybody else was doing here.
Yeah.
But what I find worrisome, and I hope Richard can respond to that because we're rapidly running out of time,
is that there is a very strong sense of bias here on the people that are doing the Russian investigation. 9 out of the 15 players on Mueller's team, it's factually known they were contributors to the Clinton people, to the Democrats. So, but, you know, people that are going forward, and maybe
Peter's
even
correct.
Flynn and Manafort will say this, is that you see these people are intensely politicized. They're very biased here. I mean, they will be able to challenge any kind of prosecution and even sentencing and go back to court and say, you know, I was in the poison well. The atmosphere was very poisonous. We need to know more about this cabal in the FBI and the DOJ. What's going on? I mean, did they sit around and strategize? Because it certainly sounds like it. Go ahead, John.
Peter,
I think they
all
I think
these
they
things
did. Look,
that you're
Hang on, let me get John
first.
We'll
go to Richard.
Republican. It's not about Republican and Democrat. This is about establishment and deep state. And Stroke used the words insurance policy. Well, their dossier was the insurance policy to ensure Hillary's win. That failed. Mueller is their insurance policy. He was the contingency plan in
exactly.
the event Trump won. I don't care who he was appointed by. The guy spent his entire life as a deep state operative working in government. And
right.
now he's
gentlemen,
been tasked
I have to
with
jump
maintaining
in here.
The status quo.
I have to jump in here. Richard's been the odd man out. 30 seconds. You got the last 30 seconds, Richard.
All these comments in these texts that were attributed to Strzok were things that the American public believed that Trump was dishonest, right? That he was reckless, that he was incompetent. This was not something that was
the
unique
American
to Peter Strzok.
And
as regards all these terms, that's what Jeb Bush was saying. That's what Ted Cruz was saying. All these horrible things that were being said about Donald Trump by Strzok. All these Republican opponents were saying the same thing. That's what the American public,
the
by
American
and large,
people are not prosecuting.
So somehow or other, to
Mueller
say that
is, and Sturzak are
okay.
Yeah, I wasn't on that text.
He was a very powerful man, and he got caught. Gentlemen, we've run out of time. Many thanks to my guests in Washington, Miami, and in Phoenix, and thanks to our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time, and remember, Crosstalk Rules.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.